Prices with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, top of hour two on this Monday. George Weaver joins us, and of course, everything stops when we get the opportunity to visit with George Weaver. And there's a lot to talk about because George very quietly is sitting on one of the top two-year-olds in the country that nobody really knew about. And while everybody was busy, Breeders' Cup weekend, there you were with Vekoma for Randy Hill and Matt Gatsis, and Vekoma with a 99 buyer, a visually impressive follow-up to his maiden win, wins the Nashua, and is clearly one of the top two-year-olds in the country. George, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
No, not at all. Couldn't wait. And, of course, I had to wait till today because last week, you know, you understand. The Breeders' Cup stuff, it takes priority.
For sure. We'll be there one day.
Well, we have every confidence, and it might be with this horse. Talk about Vekoma, and, you obviously knew right away that this was a talented type. Start at the beginning before we get to the stake win and what's ahead.
Well, the horse has always shown us talent. You know, he came into us towards the end of June. He had been working well in Ocala with Steve Venosa, and, you know, he came in and continued on, and we were always impressed with him. Not so much as a talent. We knew he had some talent, but just the way he acted. He just has a classic way about him. He always seems like he knew exactly what his purpose was. And just a straightforward horse, no bad habits, just a pleasure to be around.
The purchase, how did everything come about in terms of acquisition?
Well, we bought him at Keeneland in September, a year ago September, and I don't know how we got him for $135,000, to be honest with you. I mean, he was he's a May 22nd baby, so maybe he's a little immature, but,
wow.
You know, he looked athletic to me, and Steve, Steve got there, and he okayed him, and we just went in the ring and bought him. We didn't know what he was going to bring, and so we're really delighted to have him, I can tell you that.
$135,000 for a candy ride, and interesting the way things go about. How far back in the sale was he?
No, he was early. He was like hip five something. I mean, I think
wow.
He was up there. I think he was up there in the same barn, same day of the sale as game game winner. You know, Baffert's horse. I think.
How about that?
That horse bought $110,000. So there's two candy ride colts selling, sold up pretty much in the same session, or close to it, for not that much money. It's hard to believe me. It's hard to fathom, because when you go there, it's very hard to buy horses. Most of the time, you find the horses you like, and you go up there and you get outrun on them.
Were Matt and Randy tied in already, or did Randy bring Matt in later? How did the partnership come about?
Well, they talked beforehand. You know, the Gatsis and Randy have partnered on a couple of horses in the past. Mo Maverick, one of them, and
sure.
Actually Four Honor, that broker maiden up there at Saratoga. It's happened, and they just they've done a couple more because it's just a good partnership. You know, we're all on the same team. We hang around in those boxes in Saratoga, and that's probably the birth of it right there. You get to know people there, but the Gatsis are great people. Randy's, he's a great guy too, and it's just been to be honest, it's just been an easy partnership. They get along great, and it's just been easy.
The key question, of course, is with Matt hanging around with Randy. Can he keep up? Can he keep up the drinking and the carrying on?
No, I don't think anybody. You know, that's always Randy's always five in front when it comes to that. You know, he's hard to keep up with.
He's a front runner.
Yes, he is.
No, this could not be a cooler story. And you know, the debut for those that didn't see the win going six, you know, he got bet too. I mean, he was a little over 5-2, and Manny Franco clearly knew what was under him going into this too, because he rode him like a 3-5 shot.
Yeah, he was confident. I mean, I really never let him run that much in the morning. I was trying to keep him on a down low, but that's hard to do. There's so many eyes and ears out there. But he, anyway, we knew he had some ability, and Manny was aware of it before he got on him. So he did ride him confidently, and it's nice to be confident. It's nice to be able to be confident going into a race, because not very many horses give you that feeling.
The stretch out, George, from six to a mile, and of course you had to make the transition as well from Belmont over, you know, where he broke the maiden, to Aqueduct. Talk about the 6 furlongs to a mile and how you approached it last Sunday.
Well, I would have preferred going from 6 to 7 myself, but there's really not that many spots. There aren't any options. If I didn't run in the Nashua, I could have run a Laurel back, a week later in a 6 furlong stake, staying at the six furlongs, but we wanted to try to test them, and there's just not that many spots. So the Nashua is where we had to go. So even though it was a jump up and more in distance than I would have preferred, ideally, you know, that's the way the game is. It's never ideal. You know what I mean? They don't write the races for you. The schedule is the schedule. You got to try to make the races as you can. But I figured, as good as he was, we would get a little idea about distance with him. Because I, quite frankly, I was like, you know what? He's good enough. Even if he doesn't want to go further, he'll get the mile. You know what I mean? It'd have to be a good horse to beat him. That's for sure.
Well, he got bet down to favoritism. Went off at 2-1, and he didn't break sharply. I mean, it wasn't a concern. In fact, it may have actually been, you know, a little bit of a positive, because it gave him a chance to sit off some real speed that was set early.
Yeah, I mean, my instructions to Manny were to, you know, not to get in a hurry down the backside. I mean, I didn't want to grab a hold of him or anchor him back. But the horse is really kind in the morning. He's not a runoff. You don't have to worry about him taking a bit and being too strong, at least not so far. And when Manny came back, he just said he actually broke so quickly that he just took a few steps. Like he actually gets into stride so quickly that he actually, like, stumbled a little bit. Or he just, like, you know what I mean? Like, the ground was breaking away from him. He was getting into gear so fast. So, but it worked out. It went like I wanted it to. Wherever he was, on the lead or in the back, I just wanted him, you know, comfortable down the backside. You know, giving him a chance to show what he could do when it counted.
Well, that's exactly what he did, and you know, I sent the figure. The figure came out very early after the race, and Andy Beyer had banged out the 99 Beyer, and that puts him in, you know, right at the top of the division, and logically the opportunity to come back for the Remsen. Talk a little bit, George, about, you know, how he came out of the race, and what you've seen this week, and you know, how you anticipate going forward.
Well, you know, our initial reaction after the Nashua was like, we should take a look at the Remsen. It's a mile and an eighth. You know, we're getting an idea of it. But, you know, he was a little tired after the Nashua, and I thought that perhaps backed out of the feeds up a little bit. So I talked to Randy and the Gatchis, and we brought him down to Florida. We're going to train him here. We haven't ruled the Remsen out 100%, but he is a May 22nd baby, essentially 8 days away from being a June foal. And we really don't want to squeeze the lemon too soon. You know, there's a lot of lucrative races as a three-year-old. And so I think at this point that the Remsen is probably unlikely, and we'll probably point to some kind of campaign that begins, you know, in the early part of 2019. But nothing's written in stone. We're kind of, you know, letting the horse get back underneath himself, and he's going to be the one that lets us know when he's ready to fire.
and of course, being you know, being you're back at Palm Beach Downs.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
How's the alligator?
Yeah, the alligator's good. It might have grown a little bit. Looks bigger to me.
you would have options, obviously, and that includes going across to Tampa, and depending on you know what you'd want to do, and you know would you want him to start at two turns to start the year, or would you you know try to go with a one turn at Gulfstream maybe before stretching out and getting that second turn?
I guess the timing would depend on when we got started. But I think that at this point he's got a couple of races under his belt. I mean, if you're trying to make the Derby, I think that the more two-turn experience, the better. So probably try a two-turn race with him off the bat whenever we run him and see how he handles it, and then go from there.
Well, and you know, for those that don't remember the dam here, Mona DeMama, she was very nice. Like three quarter, 7/8 type, right? The Spitestown mare. She was a stake winning type, but I don't think she went two turns.
I think she won. I think she won the Humana Distaff, which was a great one. Won 7/8. So, I mean, everything that this horse does. I mean, there's nothing that this horse does in the morning that makes me think that he's really has distance limitations. But he is naturally fast, and his mother was a sprinter. So that's the only thing in the back of your mind: is that going to catch up with him? When the distances get longer, I don't know. But I'm glad to be in a position to try to find out. And
well,
you know, I know he's a top quality horse. You know, he's a very, very, very talented horse.
No, you're absolutely right. She did win. She did win the Humana, and did it for John Sadler. In fact, that might have been John's last Grade One win before away from California. before Accelerate, it might have been. I'm saying that off the cuff, but that very well that goes back to 2010, and she was really nice. And Joel Rosario rode her. Unbelievable.
That had to be a relief for Sadler after the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Oh, my God.
I was like, there you go, everybody. Y'all want to think I can't do it. There you go. I did it.
Exactly. Well, we're excited. We're excited for you, as always, with this horse, Bacoma, for Gatsis Stable, Matt Gatsis, and Randy Hill, two of the most affable ownership entities around the game. And George, in addition to that win last week and preparing for the three-year-old season, Majestic Dunhill, who's really been useful, nice win on Saturday at Laurel. Talk about that.
Well, he's he's had a great year. You know, it seemed to me as a two-year-old that he just didn't carry himself as, you know, he didn't follow through with his dirt works as well as he did on the grass, and his sire seems to be kind of, I don't know, he seems to be throw out a lot of kind of turf sprinter type horses. And so we were kind of stuck in the turf sprinter mode early on as a two-year-old. Then he, you know, he needed some time off. We brought him back, and I didn't really see anything to change path, you know, as the year began. And so we went there to Monmouth, won a one other than, and came back in the 5.5 furlong stake for three-year-olds. He won that. And so, you know, the horse is running good. It wasn't really time to change anything. And The race at Saratoga, he just never got going. You know, it was yielding, and he was too far back, and it just wasn't him. You know, and in that particular race, you didn't really see a lot of horses close. They were all just toiling through the stuff, and I think World of Trouble won it. He obviously ended up being he's a very, very salty horse, very good turf sprinter. And then we went to Kentucky Downs, and he finished second, beating a nose there, going much further. And now we're looking for some place to go. I wanted to run him in the English Channel, a mile on the grass. I was like, let's give him a little more distance. That got canceled. And so I was there the Monday after Vekoma won. We worked him on the dirt there at Belmont. And, I mean, he worked some kind of good. And I wasn't even looking at the Laurel race. And, you know, it just so happened that after the work, I started looking around. I was like, hell, I can run right here at Laurel in the 7/8 race. And I felt really good about him, the way he worked. It didn't surprise me at all that he ran as well as he did.
And so that's his first.
It opens up some opportunities for us. You know, we don't have to just strictly stay at the 5.5 on the turf, which is good because it's kind of a pain in the butt when those turf spinners that are out of condition. It's hard to spot them.
Well, and this definitely gives you some alternatives. He's a majestic perfection, and out of a Candy Ride mare, and in fact, this is also a horse that this was an OBS 2-year-old, the March sale last year, but this was also a Steve Venosa product.
That's right. Randy and I do business with Steve. Steve picks out our horses and consults us when we're trying to find horses, and he also breaks and trains the babies, and he's also a 2-year-old consigner. So this horse was, he didn't do anything wrong. He worked in 21-4 at the sale, I believe, or something close to it, and looked okay doing it, but he didn't have much interest in the horse. The horse is a little light on his page. He was by Majestic Perfection, and he's just not a hot sire, and Steve had been training the horse all winter, and he recommended him. And so we bought them. So it's nice to have a relationship, like that with somebody. You take a shot with a horse and you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for him.
Well, I don't know if you noticed this, George, at all, but his half-brother, Hog Creek Hustle, won it at Churchill over the weekend, in fact, on Saturday.
I did see that. We actually, Steve and I liked him as a yearling, too. We took a run at him, but he ended up going for 150, and we weren't thinking, being by overanalyzed, that we weren't prepared to go that far, and we had to let him go. But he did run really well. It was a pretty impressive race. I watched the replay a couple of days ago, and that was the same day that Majestic Dunhill won, right?
Yes, and I'll tell you this: this dam, Candy Fortune, she's produced these two horses. These are her first two foals, Majestic Dunhill and Hot Creek Hustle. And she's done it with Majestic Perfection and Overanalyze. And she's obviously going to have she's a young broodmare. She was unraced, and she's only 7. And I don't know what she's carrying.
Well, I can take the story even further, Steve. The reason I like this horse is because the way back, the third dam of Majestic Dunhill is a filly named Fortunate Card, who the Pollards owned, and she had won, I think she won a stake, she won a Florida bred stake or a stake at Call the first time out. Henry Collazo had her, and I was just getting started with the Pollards.
Wow.
And the Pollards moved her to me. And she had a chip in the knee, and it really, we might have run her one time, but I told him, because she really was a nice filly. And I told him, let's just breed her. And so we bred her to More Than Ready 2 times. The first one we tried to raise, he was kind of a dud, got injured, and we retired and found a home for him. The next one was a stakes winning. She was a stakes winner. I think she won the Cicada in New York. But anyway, the Fortunate Card died after that second foal. And so I knew the pedigree. And it just so happened, that's why it looks so blank, is because she didn't have any other foals, and the next mare didn't have any. You know what I mean? So it's kind of
unbelievable.
It's one of those tricky, it's better than it looks on paper, is what I'm saying. But I knew from way back where, the bloodlines, and that was another reason I was interested in this horse.
This is what you get when you sign on with George Weaver. This is unbelievable. And the weanling is a Fedbiz colt. It's interesting. She's dropped 4 straight boys. She has not had a filly yet, but she had. There's a weanling by Fedbiz, and there's a yearling by Gemologist out of Candy Fortune. Cool story, George. Amazing, amazing. Interesting that Majestic Dunhill, we got excited about last year at Saratoga when he broke his maiden, and it did feel like this kind of a that there was talent here for this kind of success. City of Laurel Stake win, and figure wise what we get, 87 buyer, and so he continues to improve as a 3-year-old. And if he's funny, it's one of those horses, George, that he's a 3-year-old and it feels like he's been around longer than that.
Well, he's had a fairly prolific how it is these days. The 2-year-olds, if they run a couple of times, it's a lot. So he actually ran, I think he ran 4 or 5 times as a 2-year-old, and he had quite a few dance. He's been all over this year. So, But he should get better with age, because I tell you, like, we ended up cutting him over to from 2-year-old to 3-year-old season. He just was always unfocused. I mean, he was one of those horses, like, I had to try, you know, tell the riders, you know, just ride him as fast as you can get him to go. And we rarely say that. Like, I wouldn't say that about a horse like Vekoma. I mean, Vekoma, there's no telling how fast he would go. But this other horse, Majestic Dunhill, he took a long time to get it. Like, he worked 3/8 and 42. If you put somebody didn't know what they were doing, he'd just go out there and work slow as could be. So, just a horse that wasn't completely focused early on as a 2-year-old. And I think he's finally understanding how to do it. You know, even when he's 2, I used to send him. The first couple times I ran him, I told the rider, send him, because he's lazy, doesn't want to do it. And, he showed speed and kind of weakened a little bit in the lane. And then when we got to Saratoga before he broke his maiden, I told Manny, I said, Manny, don't, he's got natural speed, but don't use it. Don't take him back, but don't squeeze him down the backside. Make sure you save something for a finish. And that day he broke through with a big win. And he ran a good figure that day, 5.5 on the grass. And so we've been kind of reinforcing that ever since then, is not try to rush him so much early and let him come running. And, I mean, except for the race at Saratoga and that yielding turf, I mean, every race this year, I mean, he's been finishing really strong.
Well, and he also, along the way, he kept running into good horses, too. He met up with Hemp Hemp Hooray in his debut. He ran into Therapist in the Laurel Futurity. World of Trouble in that quick call. I mean, it's not as if he hasn't kept good company. So this is a nice win, and it adds to what should be, any number of opportunities over the winter with Majestic Dunhill. Let me ask you, too. I got a couple of horses to inquire about. You got that nice New York bred coming back this week at Aqueduct. Colonel Tom looking for a third win.
Yeah, he's had a good year, too. He knocked out a couple. And that race at Saratoga was unbelievable. I mean, I didn't think we could make the lead. We were inside, and I told Dylan, I was like, I don't think you can make it, but go ahead and try to make it. He didn't break that quick, but man, he asked him for some speed, and what'd he go, like 21 and change, 43 and change? It was his pretty fast race in Saratoga. So he, we tried him in the 3-year-old stake, and he didn't really like to give him the ground. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. It looks like there's more rain coming, but
yep.
He did like the Aqueduct turf course when he broke his maiden, almost a year ago. So, you know, we're hoping it's a good spot for him and he can show what he can do. I'm just playing and it doesn't rain as much as they say it's going to rain.
It always seems to, though. Nobody's ever seen anything like it, and it will not let up.
This year, I'm telling you, this year, there haven't been 3 dry days in a row. I mean, it's like you get 2.5 days, boom, an inch of rain. Another 2.5 days, an inch of rain. I mean, it's just been terrible for turf horses that don't like giving the ground. I mean, it's been hard.
Exactly. And in a lot of cases, you don't know unless you try them. And knowing that it's been like this, you go ahead and run. If it is soft, you go ahead and run because you don't know if you're going to get another chance to run on it. It's been very... people don't realize how difficult it is to deal with. George, I've got to ask John in New York, who I'm sure has harassed you at the track, asking about young horses. Let me run down the 3 that he's interested in. Painter by Numbers, Vinda Machine, and Magical Mike. What's up with those 3?
Painter by Numbers, West Point Filly by Painter. She's been doing very well, and we plan on running her either 7/8 or a mile here pretty soon. She's got another gate work to get through, but we like her. And, we'll see what she can do, but she's been working well. Vinda Machine is a homebred that I have by Freud. We'll probably run her on the grass. She's has good work, some good work, some bad. But, hopefully she can, in the New York bred program, she can make a dent on things. And Magical Mike, he's a homebred as well for Jack Anderson and Smart Choice Stables. And he's making progress, too. We're in a bad spot with him. He's probably a little better on the grass, and the grass is about to be done in New York, but perhaps we'll get a race up there before it's over and see what he's got. So, but Painter by Numbers, we're looking forward to seeing her pretty soon.
Excellent. Excellent. George, outstanding. Delighted for the successes, and wish you the best through the end of the year, and we'll look forward to Vekoma getting on the 3-year-old classic trail, because he's got every marking that's appropriate for it. So continued success, and best wishes for Thanksgiving, and we'll see you and talk soon.
Great, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Enjoy the rest of the day.
You too. George Weaver, everybody, who is one of not just my favorite visitors, but just somebody that is as good as there is. Low profile, except when he's around Randy. It's tough to keep a low profile when you're in the undertow of Randy Hill. Vekoma, keep close tabs, put him on your list. And obviously, that's amazing that he was bought around the same time as, I'll pull up the Keeneland numbers from last year, that he was Candy Ride bought in proximity to Game Winner. Interesting. For less money. 90 minutes gone by here in a blur. Let's take a break. Johnny D joins us next, and we'll actually stay around Philly because Dick Girardi. As well, Dick's going to join us. Dick will tell you about the time spent with Bob Levy. And we also got a couple other things with Dick, too, because Dick made a real run in the BCBC. So we'll get his BCBC thoughts afterward and regular thoughts in general. I don't know why we don't visit more with Dick Girardi. Between his buyer responsibilities and everything else. But Johnny D kicks off second half. I know you've been waiting patiently for Johnny. He's next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Wine.
back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Johnny, we're sorry. Won't you come on home? We're worried. Won't you come on? Water's wrong in my life. I must get drunk every night. Johnny,
we're back. Second half, 90 minutes in, 90 to come, and I'm laughing because I needed Tina to come and place the headset back on my head because I made the mistake of my hands are torn up to pieces. Yesterday, Tina's home from school, I worked on the garage yesterday. I cleaned the garage while Tina did the yard stuff and the final yard stuff before the winter is, you know, the winterization, as it were. And so my hands are like sandpaper. So I made the mistake of putting some bag balm on, and then you can't touch anything because it takes a little bit to soak in. So Tina needed to come and assist me. Johnny D, standing by, Johnny. I know you were fascinated by...
by
our...
Who told you to put the balm on? You know what a bomb can do? You know what a bomb is?
What's that from?
Seinfeld.
Oh, there you go. Done.
Kramer, let's see if I have the episode correct. Kramer burns himself buying hot coffee, and they're suing the company. Because the coffee's too hot. So they go to court, but Kramer put the bomb on his injury, and the bomb heals it up overnight. And so his lawyer, Jackie Child, was screaming at him. He told him to put the bomb on.
That's it. I had no choice, though.
Ruined the case. Well, the only other advice I have for you, Steve, is, you know, there are people who need to be paid to do things. You know, it keeps the economy moving. You know, people are looking for jobs. Hire someone to do this stuff for you. Keep your hands fresh, and get the economy, stimulate the economy at the same time.
But you can't hire somebody to clean the garage because there's things that have to be thrown out. And so you got to make those. What am I going to do? Sit there in a chair and say, okay, yeah, throw that out? I can't do that.
Sounds about right to me.
that's the way. That's the Johnny D way. Well, but you live in a complex. All of your stuff, you've got maintenance. You've got a maintenance team that handles all that stuff for you.
Yeah.
He says, matter of factly.
This didn't happen by accident. And by the way, it's not free. You know, I mean, we pay for this service. They don't clean out the garage, though. But the good news is my garage barely can hold a car. So cleaning out my garage is not big enough to hold the car. So barely. Big enough to hold the car. So cleaning out my garage is not something I need to do.
Well, this is like a carriage house, basically. You live in a village here where everybody's got, you know, a carriage house behind the house, and where they used to keep a carriage, and in some cases keep a carriage and a horse. So there's not only is there the garage part, but there's also there's like a dormer. There's an upstairs to it. And that, luckily we did that. I think we did that in the spring, and we got rid of stuff. You wouldn't believe what I had to get rid of, including an animal that had chosen to breathe its last up there. It's like living. I'm like Daniel Boone around here. You have no idea.
Well, the good news is, you know, I know you know a lot of trainers because I hear you talk to them every day during the week. And you could bring one of those in, and they could take care of the carriage and the horse.
That's true.
Oh, man, well, what happened to our team last night?
Well, I was smart, Johnny. I was probably, I may have been smarter than you on this one. I was so exhausted from yesterday's effort that I simply taped it and got up at 4 and was able to skip through. And I can tell you...
I hope they won that time.
No, they didn't. And I can tell you that I knew at halftime they weren't winning. It was with all the chances that came, I could see where that was headed. That one... That had all the earmarks.
Yeah.
And a few bite marks.
In my analysis, I kind of felt like in between falling asleep and having Gail wake me up and to sing Fly Eagles Fly, it seemed to me that Dallas was desperate last night. It was critical. But if you look, you know, the division, this was an important game for them to kind of, they got back on track a little bit, but they needed, division-wise, they needed to get a division win. They got it. I'm not sure they're a better team than the Eagles, but they were last night. The next meeting, I think, we'll handle them.
Well, they had every opportunity to win that game. That's the frustrating part. But as I mentioned a few weeks ago, after we were leaving the Panther game, and the young guy said, you know, if they hadn't won the Super Bowl last year, I'd be really annoyed. But I got that. We got that going for us, which takes a lot of the. What does Sam say in Casablanca? This will take the sting out of being occupied.
definitely does. They have a pass this year.
Very much.
You know,
well,
you started the show with a couple of sad topics.
Yeah.
One horrifying topic: the death of Adonis Acuna, Churchill Downs exercise rider, in a morning incident, and the death of his mount also in the morning. I thought about it, and I thought, you know, all the time that I spent on the racetrack, actually working in the morning, which is my favorite time at the racetrack for a variety of reasons, I have to say that gratefully, this is rare. Now, it's not rare for an exercise rider to be injured severely, too. But it is rare for one to be killed. So that's a good thing. But then, as I read about Adonis Acuna and his life, you know, a Cuban immigrant, had several jobs, putting things together, trying to get his family here in the States. By all accounts, a great guy, a hard worker. That profile, I'm happy to say, is not unusual in the racetrack. In fact, that profile is very common. There are many exercise riders, grooms, people who work in various jobs at the racetrack who are hardworking individuals trying to get ahead in this country, contribute greatly to everything that goes on in this country, raise fine families. And that is common. And I just, as I thought about it, you know, thankfully, the injury and the death part is really, the injury part's not as uncommon, but it's rare. The death part is extremely rare, thankfully. But the other aspect of Adonis Acuna's life is very similar to what goes on with many, many people who work at racetracks all across the country. Do we have maybe a few a few people who don't fit elsewhere in society that roll into our racetracks and find work, and maybe they have different kinds of issues and problems. Yes, we have those people too. Like society, we have those people too. But I have to tell you that my experience, and I'm talking 30 years on the racetrack, I have met way more people like Adonis Acuna than the other kind, than the negative kind. So I just, I wanted to make that point because I thought it, I hadn't heard anyone make that point yet. And certainly his death, we need to talk about that and the GoFundMe page and contributing to, you know, his services and his family. And that's all important. But I thought we should note that this is not a singular case. That this man who, by all accounts, is a good guy and a hard worker, he's not alone in that respect.
Yeah, nicely point made, Johnny. It's really true, and Tony Black will address it too. I'm always struck whenever this happens. They've been keeping records since World War II, and two riders a year on average are killed. I mean, it's you can't even. You know, I mean, other than lines of duty where, you know, you are, you know, you're known to be in peril. I mean, what who among us? I mean, unless you're a first responder type, fireman, policeman, military. Of course, today a perfect backdrop in that regard. I just you can't even conceive of it. I mean, miners, and people that work in you know, in that kind of a dangerous environment. The portion of the family coming and being so close to, you know, to realizing. The work and realizing the dreams associated with it, it should give everybody pause.
Yeah. And you also mentioned the passing of Bob Levy, and I know Dick is going to address Dick Girardi can address this later on in the show, but I knew Bob. Personally, not real well. We weren't pals or anything, but he was around quite a bit when I was in high school. We graduated from the same high school, I would say quite a bit apart, quite a few decades apart, but we graduated from the same high school. And he was a great benefactor to my high school.
Ben Charter.
Very generous. Yes, very, very generous with his money, and he also started a Philadelphia area football team called the Little Quakers, and it was an age kind of weight restriction team of, you know, they had tryouts. It was kind of an area all-star team for, I would say, like, I don't know exactly, 12-year-olds, 13, you know, somewhere around there, and like 135-pound weight limit, something along those lines. And they would ship around the country and play other all-star teams around the nation. And this was all, you know, Mr. Levy's project. He was the organizer. He was the owner. He owned the franchise, and I think he footed the bill for all the trips. And of course, many of the players, the Little Quaker players, who were academically qualified, then Mr. Levy would help to give them scholarships to go to my high school, which was Penn Charter, same high school, William Penn Charter School in Philadelphia, same school that Mr. Levy attended. So Mr. Levy's generosity opened the door for many of these kids who were from various parts of the city. I mean, these were kids who needed help to go, who needed the break to get out of the hood and attend, you know, a great school like Penn Charter, a great private, you know, Philadelphia area high school. And his generosity opened the door for so many kids. And part of Mr. Lee, he loved sports. Mr. Lee loved sports. It didn't matter. He was a great benefactor of the University of Penn also. He loved coached the tennis team at Penn. I mean, he just absolutely owned the Phillies. Was partial owner of the Phillies for a time. Obviously, we'll talk about his horses and stuff. But he just absolutely loved sports. There's no other way to put it. And one of the things he really enjoyed doing was coaching, helping the coaches out on game day at my high school, at Penn Charter. So, so he would show up sometimes during the week, but he's a busy guy. But he would show up for all the games and stand on the sidelines and help coach the team. And one game, I can't remember what year I was, junior or senior or whatever. I'm standing on the sidelines next to our head coach and Mr. Levy. And the game's going on, and I'm waiting to be sent back in, and I played running back on offense and defensive back on defense, and we had the ball, and Mr. Levy says to our coach, he says, Hench, you got to get DeSantis out of there. He doesn't know what he's doing. You got to get him out of there. And I said, Mr. Levy, I'm not even in the game. I'm standing here. I was standing on the sidelines next to him, and he's yelling at the coach, "We got to get the Santas out of there." So when I got involved in racing, which is kind of strange because, after high school, I went to college in California, and I stayed in California. And so I really didn't connect with Mr. Levy much on the racing side of things until down the road. You know, I'd meet him at different functions if I was back in town at some kind of a reunion, a high school reunion, a college, a high school function. But then I'd be back in California, and we really didn't meet up that much. But I did bump into him in Arizona a couple times at the symposium, and we went to dinner and we hung around together. And, you know, when people say that guy was a great guy, you know, I hope somebody says that about me when it's done. Oh, and by the way, I hope when I go, I hope your show's still in the air, because I want to get like a week's worth of, I want to get a full solid week's worth, even though I don't deserve it. I still want one. But anyway, to get back to Mr. Levy, he was just a great guy. He was a great guy to hang out with. He was a fun guy. He was generous. He loved sports. And you know what? I mean, he was sharp, too. Really. And he remembered. I mean, he didn't see me for, I mean, other than to see me and say hello for 10 years, a decade, and to see me and then remember everything about me, my brother's name, my mother's name, where I lived, where I grew up, what I did at Penn Charter. He knew everything and remembered everything. So this is the kind of man he was. And I'm telling you, I'm not a singular case. And Dick will tell you a lot more about him, because Dick was here in Philly and was around Mr. Levy a lot more than I was. But the time I and the things I saw him do, the generosity particularly, he shared his fortune with other people. He was a great guy.
Yeah, it's been a rough year, Johnny. I was actually over the weekend was going through the 10 month and 2 weeks worth of the year, really a year's worth going back to last December, and I was struck by how often we were. You know, I'm going to say obligated. That's the wrong word, but how regularly we've been compelled to have to, you know, stop and pay tribute to people that, you know, have either devoted their lives or their professional careers to the game, and it's been maybe I'm overstating it, but it just feels like it's been an unusually difficult calendar year on that front.
I agree. Seems like, it seems like you've worked overtime. We've worked overtime paying tribute to people who, and I don't remember doing that so often in previous years. It's just been an unlucky year that way. But I just want to remind you to save a week, because because
when the time comes,
save that week, will you, buddy?
Unbelievable.
You might have to pay a few people to get on the air, but you know,
I don't think so.
Pull out all the stops.
Well, we know that Nagler alone will be good for 2.5 hours. I'd be worried that Nagler's going to be like one of those professional mourners in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He's going to.
That's going to be my motto. I want my week.
Give me the week I'm due. Oh my God! Well, Johnny, I've been due all Stronach 5 season. I was due and could not connect the dots, and I did miss a couple of the ones the last 2 weeks going into Breeders' Cup. You know, it was plenty busy with that, so I didn't play the first one in November or the last one in October. But let's take a minute, because I'm sure you went after it and it paid a very healthy $18,000, and it really was not. There was one particularly tricky horse to get that was in the fourth leg at Gulfstream, but upon further review, that horse really, after the scratch, I think it was only made more difficult because the horse that was everybody's universal single, Victor Lounge, came out. And if you had handicapped the race without Victor Lounge from the beginning, you would have found Grand King of Kings.
Yeah, everything you say is true, and then I have to, including the fact that I didn't hit the Stronach 5 at all this year either, and I didn't miss 2 weeks. I played every week, and as a, there were a couple changes from the Stronach 5. Obviously, is the rebirth of the Magna 5, and there were a couple new twists on the Stronach 5 that made it more competitive, more challenging, harder to hit, more diabolical, however you want to phrase it. There were several challenges. Now, they made it a buck, which I think at the end of the Magna 5, we switched to a buck. And that was a good move. The 12% takeout was sensational. But the races that they used, when the first Magna 5 came around, we were trying to use quality races. Quality over quantity. And this time, it was a little more quantity over quality. And so the races were so much more challenging this this go around, and this is, you know, we can look back on all the weeks now. You know, all the payoffs were outstanding, and it was tough. It was really tough, but also, I think you really got to look at what can happen when you have a dollar pick five versus a 50-cent pick five, and also what a 12% takeout can do to a wager. You just talked about the most recent Stronach 5, which happened in the final one for this season, which was Friday, about the payoffs, about the horses who won those races. And it paid almost $18,000 for that collection, which is awesome, you know. And really, you know, now we had a carryover. I think we had like a $51,000 carryover into that pool. And I think the final pool was around 180, I believe, something like that. So, you know, it wasn't one of these crazy million-dollar pools or anything. So you can just see what happens. At a dollar minimum, with a 12% takeout, a pick five with a reasonable, not a crazy, like the week before we had a $108 winner, kicked the thing off and everybody was out the first leg. Not crazy like that. Just a challenging pick five pays $18,000. So this is a really nice wager. And I think if people get used to it, I don't know about the timing at this part of the year, this time of the year, it kind of ran into the Breeders' Cup. And I don't know, maybe later on if we have Stronach Group does it again at some other time, it may go a little better as far as attention-wise. But I thought it was a great example of what can happen when tracks get together and put on something that the horse players can really sink their teeth into. This was an outstanding opportunity to make some money. I didn't make any money. Stronach 5 owes me money. We'll get even later. But at this point, I thought it was a, you know, you look back on it, you say, did it work? Did it not work? Which, by the way, the discussion now that we're at Del Mar and we've got the $2 pick six back, and you look at what went on at Santa Anita and what's going on at Gulfstream with the Rainbow Six jackpot wager, you start to look at the Del Mar Garden Variety $2 pick six. And I haven't heard any announcement yet as to whether Santa Anita is going to be 20-cent Rainbow Six or $2 pick six. And I started to think to myself, which one do I like better than the other? And really, it's a real tug of war. I've made nice scores in both wagers. So in that area, they're balanced. I understand the takeout is giant in the 20-cent Rainbow Six. It's huge. But then you also have these massive days. And I know the one at Santa Anita kind of was like where all the favorites won. It kind of was like one of those firecrackers that you light and it just never explodes. It was more like what do they call it, an M40 that turned out to be a dud. You're expecting this big bang in it. But we've also seen nice payoffs at Gulfstream Park many times. We've seen the Rainbow Six work when there's been giant pools. So I go back and forth. But I like the fact that at 20 cents, a guy like me, I feel like I can play a competitive ticket. I can really sink my teeth into a sequence. At $2, I'm stretching it. I feel like, yeah, you know, I don't like that in the Rainbow Six. When I get 5 out of 6, when I have a bunch of fives, I get nothing. $2 pick six, I rely on those fives to kind of heal my wounds when I lose. They kind of keep me coming back because they give me something back. You know, maybe I get my money back. Maybe I get most of my money back. It's a real tough call The one thing I do think that's different is that the Rainbow Six at Gulfstream really seems to work best at that plant with that racing, because the full turf field, I mean, where you get 13 or 14 entered in, you know, these wild, crazy, maybe claiming turf races where, you know, you've really got to do your homework, or, you know, where trips, you know, what's the old saying about the turf racing where one wins and six shouldn't.
That's the chief. That's the Alan Jurgens.
The chief, exactly. And that you get that there. And maybe that kind of feeds into the lottery type. And you don't get that as much at Santa Anita, where, you know, there's a little more quality involved and less quantity, maybe. And even in the small, shorter fields, you're going to get your eight-horse fields and nine-horse fields, and you're going to be able to it plays out differently at Gulfstream. But somebody hit that the other day, Friday, I think, for $71,000.
Right.
That's a 20-cent wager for $71,000. I mean, I understand the takeout stuff. I understand how it works. I'm not an idiot. I've listened to the experts. But I can get a pretty good shot at $71,000 for a 20-cent increment that I can't get for $2 increments. I can't, you know, I can't get as involved. So bottom line, I think this is a real struggle. It's a real tug of war in my mind. Which is the way to go? And I haven't heard a decision yet. I'm sure, you know, financial considerations are always part of the picture. Absolutely, they have to be. It's a business. And those huge days are wonderful. But, you know, I don't know. As far as for me personally, I'm having a real tug of war with this one.
Well, you know, I this topic I have wrestled with from day one, and there's a lot wrong with the concept, and it for what it does, for what it doesn't do, there's more negatives than positives, and I know there's people who have, you know, who really have taken to it and, you know, play it. Go back to the conversations we used to have with Chet, and Chet figured out how to approach it and had, you know, wasn't all that worried about the, you know, the force out and you know, hitting it alone. He was playing it, you know, strictly on the day by day. And was quite happy to hit for 3,000, 7,000, 6,000, 12,000, you know, whatever the daily prize was. But the effects, the negative effects of the concept and the fact that it has spread and that decision makers refuse to acknowledge the negative impact that it has overall, is troubling, and I'm not going to be dissuaded from you know, being more against it than for it. I the money it takes out of circulation, and I mean all the principles that you know we as an industry have been, you know, trying to grapple with and trying to make right decisions about, and you know, to show horse players that as an industry we're committed to them and, you know, to their vital importance in the ecosystem. The jackpot concept works against that in virtually every measurement, and I can't endorse it, embrace it, suggest it, support it. I just can't.
Well, I get all that. However, the market kind of, the market tells you what it wants. And the success of these wages, as from a player standpoint, from a contributing, I mean, why was the thought to drift away from the pick six, the $2 pick six in Santa Anita? Why consider it? Well, probably because the 50-cent pick five was hurting the pick six, and so now you give the folks. And why was that? Because people wanted to play it. They wanted to play the 50-cent minimum. They wanted to play the pick five. So now you give them a 20-cent minimum. And I get the whole thing about the money out of circulation and all that. But I don't know that money stayed in circulation anyway, because it was going to somebody. It either wasn't in the $2 pick six pool, because those people couldn't afford to play it, or if it was in there, it was going to the holder of six. So it wasn't in circulation anyway.
And that's a point well made, without a doubt. And it would take the difficulty of all this is that it's a bit of an elusive discussion, because you don't really know. And you can't necessarily, you can equate this particular meet, you can equate the dollars and cents that was totally bet in, but it doesn't, it doesn't tell you what the churn effect. I mean, it's a very difficult discussion, or a very difficult conclusion to reach. The right person, there's only a handful of people around the industry that can really, I think, speak to this the most authoritatively, and that would starting with Maury Wolf. I mean, there's Maury. Maury is the star on the Christmas tree. It's a 6-pointed star, but it's a star.
But the other point is, I mean, is the lottery a bad bet? Is the lottery a tax on the poor? Is the lottery a negative?
It's all those things.
Is there any reason that anyone should ever play the lottery? Absolutely, that's all true. But when it gets big enough, we all run out.
Well,
and we take our shot.
I get it. Well, this is a tough. And I think on Friday, I'll tell you. I thought Rick hinted at the jackpot coming back for December 26th. He said he thought it was here to stay. I mean, that he did say that on Friday. I mean, that was just a hint. I don't know if it's a definitive, if it's a definitive decision per se, that those conversations have been made or finalized. Anyway,
I couldn't take a hint.
But I'm pumped. Well, Johnny,
it's back. I'm just saying it's a tough call for me. I've gone back and forth, and usually things are not a tough call. Usually I say, I do this, or I feel that way, or this way, or like one thing I want everyone to stop doing is to stop saying these are life-changing, life-altering payoffs, okay? Because, it's just, I don't know what kind of a life you have, but, the guy that hit for $140,000 or whatever it was yesterday at Del Mar, I don't think that's enough to alter your life. It might make Christmas better. It might make the coming year a little better. But life-altering? Ah, man. What does it take? And we got into this kind of discussion. What's a life-altering score? It varies for everyone, obviously. But even if you're homeless, what's a life-altering score? A million? A half a million?
It's different for everybody.
It is. It's different for everybody. Anyway, we just don't have that many. If you can afford to be betting on horses, You're starting there. Okay, you're betting on horses, so you've got disposable income, presumably, some disposable income. You're betting on horses. You're playing the Rainbow Six, the Pick Six, the whatever. What would you? What would take for that person to have a life-altering score? How much would it take? That's the question I'm putting out there. The other one I don't like is guaranteed pool. Guaranteed wager. This is guaranteed. That's guaranteed. The only time they guarantee pools is when they know it's going to be twice that. It seems to me. I may be wrong, but
they say, well, we got to go, but they do say, because I've asked that question, and they do say that when those pots are advertised, that it does draw action. It enforces it, reinforces the opportunity for whatever reason. I used to roll my eyes too.
I get that part. Okay, say projected, estimated, expected, anticipated. I mean, it's the part that you're reminding people that this is going to be a big pool. That's the part that works. It's not the guaranteed part, because, by the way, it's not guaranteed. Because if it rains and everything comes off the turf, it's not guaranteed anymore.
Well, anyway, as of late.
This is what happens in my house.
Exactly. All right, go clean the garage, Johnny. Go get your shine box. We'll and lay off the balm. Johnny D, everybody. XB, Johnny D. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Johnny in rare form. Let's take a break. Dick Girardi will stay in Philadelphia. Dick Girardi is going to join us next. We got a handful of things to talk about with Dick. Back after this, well into Hour 3 on this Veterans Day Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.